Hi, guys. Just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, hello. Hi, guys. Happy podcast day. Happy Friday if you are listening to this when the podcast drops. This is Nicole, and welcome to my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. Hope this day finds you well. So today's a really interesting conversation. I have been struggling for years on how to explain the bridge between the TMS world and the physical therapy world. When Dr. Sarno was in practice in the days that I knew him, in the days that I was working with him at NYU, he was not recommending physical therapy because he couldn't figure out how to explain to people the way to properly use it. And he felt that when people went to physical therapy, they were focusing too much on the physical and not allowing themselves to heal properly from their work, from their emotional work that was necessary to heal. Because of course, we're living in a mind-body system, and sometimes you feel things in your heart and sometimes you feel things in your body. And if you're not making that connection and you're not understanding where your big feelings are causing the brain and the nervous system to go into a sustained fight or flight and channel those physical pains as a result of feeling that the emotional stuff was too big to bear, and you know, kind of the issues are in our tissues and feeling our trauma expressed through our body, he thought that going to physical therapy would cause too much connection between a physical solution to what people saw as a physical problem. And he thought it kept people from getting well. And he was right, in a sense. He was right because if you go to physical therapy through the lens of fear and through the lens of desperation to be fixed and saved by a practitioner, and the same could be true for therapeutic massage, it tends to be more detrimental because and I say this because I've been working with thousands and thousands of people over the years, you know, virtually, meaning that they were doing my work and then I hear from them, or back when I was in private practice with my patients, that it really doesn't work to sort of clench up and need something to fix you and keep yourself in the physical. Having said that, and I mentioned this a little bit on the podcast when I'm talking to Kathy, I had an interesting experience this summer, as you know, if you've listened to the podcast, with my shoulder, because I fell on my shoulder very hard having a bike accident, and I had a separated joint in my shoulder, and they told me there's nothing to do about it, just rest and heal. But once I rested and healed, I had kept myself from moving my shoulder in certain ways for so long that the muscles literally atrophied. I did not have range of motion in my shoulder anymore. And the only thing that fixed that was physical therapy exercises, literally being told with specific instructions on how to move my shoulder in a way that was going to increase my mobility. And after doing those exercises that had nothing to do with emotions, they were physical therapy exercises, my shoulder has no pain and has full mobility. And so it's so important to recognize that although chronic pain has an origin in your emotional world because of this very physical reaction to an emotional stimuli, if you don't move certain muscles and certain body parts for a long period of time, there is a physical change that just comes from misuse or from non-use. And so Kathy and I get into this, but the best part of the conversation is that Kathy had no idea about the connection between mind and body until she found my work from listening to My Favorite Murder. Thank you. Shout out to Georgia Hardstark for shouting me out. And so by opening herself to this work, she healed herself completely first. She has no chronic pain after struggling with it for several years. And so it's a great combo of a personal success story and a very important message about bridging the gap between TMS work and the physical therapy world, because I think there's a place for both of them. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. If you're new to my work, if any of this stuff is completely confusing to you, one question I get a lot is, what is TMS? Because it's just a buzzword that we use a lot, a buzz acronym that we use a lot in this work. I have a whole podcast about that. So just go into the archives of this podcast, and there's a one called TMS and Dr. Sarno. TMS is just an umbrella term that Dr. Sarno coined for all the syndromes, conditions, and symptoms and diagnoses that exist underneath what he calls like a mind-body umbrella. It stands for tension myositis syndrome. I would say don't try so hard to wrap your brain around what tension myositis syndrome means, because I feel like that, you know, we're here to save your life. We're not here to do a research paper. But if you need to understand what TMS means to understand it, the vernacular in which, you know, I'm speaking, there is, you know, there's a podcast. So go check it out. That is a question I get a lot. And if you're new to my work and you just want to learn more, go to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on the resources tab. If you want to work with me directly, I'm no longer in private practice, but I'm doing a virtual retreat in May, and I'm doing an in-person retreat in August at the Omega Institute. All information to sign up for that, those things are on the retreats tab. And so much other stuff. I have guided meditations. I have digital artwork that you can have for wallpapers for your phone with really important messages that can help you on this journey. I don't know, lots of other stuff. And also, I'm giving away the first lesson of my anxiety course for free in order for people to get a sense of what that is. And so there's also opportunity to sign up for that on my website. Okay. All right. Well, I hope that this day finds you well. I hope that you are okay in whatever's going on in your life. I send you big love, and I hope you enjoy this interview between me and Kathy. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the pod. Today I have with me Kathy, and I am so excited to connect with her. She is an orthopedic physical therapist, which can be a tricky topic when it comes to TMS healing. And when she reached out to me and told me her story, I immediately jumped on wanting to talk to her because I think this is such an important conversation. So welcome, Kathy.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me here, Nicole.
So Kathy, what I think we should do, since this is sort of a combo success story professional conversation, let's start with the success story, because your story is really great and I just love the way you wrote it to me. So why don't you share with everybody kind of a little history of your physical pain and how it went?
Okay, sounds good. So I started to have episodes of low back pain and muscle spasms and some leg pain starting about the fall of 2017. And looking back, I still don't really know what caused the pain, but the back pain kind of started after I got a massage for my neck, ironically. But I have to say, I didn't do a great job of really caring for myself because I tend to pour myself into caring for others. So I kind of just ignored the pain and the tightness and would live with it. But then in April 2018, it was the day before I hosted Easter dinner with my parents and my now in-laws. I just bent over to clean up, and then I ended up with severe muscle spasms and involuntary contractions, and I couldn't even stand up or walk. So I ended up having to go to the emergency room, and that was pretty humbling, kind of being wheeled around in a wheelchair because the pain and spasms were so strong. And while I was there, the doctor told me, well, you're a PT, you should know how to fix your back pain. So that was pretty terrible. I was like, oh, I need muscle relaxers. Sorry, dude. So I kind of continued working through the muscle spasms, but I really couldn't bend over or move very easily. And at work, it was really hard because I could barely demonstrate certain exercises for my patients. So that was a really big challenge. And after about 9 months, though, somehow the tightness kind of eased up and it felt a lot better. And I had a really great 2019. I got married that year, so there was a lot of fun activities and travel, and my best friend also got married, so it was a great time. And then the very day I came back from my honeymoon, the pain returned worse than before. So I kind of thought, oh, it has to do with sitting on the airplane for 7 hours. Didn't really associate it with that starting married life is pretty challenging, and there's a lot of emotions that come along with that. So then by 2020, of course, we have the pandemic hitting, and I was actually furloughed from my job for 8 weeks, which was a really huge challenge and very unexpected, because PTs tend to have really good job security because, unfortunately, people tend to always get injured themselves. So it was really right. difficult to kind of go through some unemployment periods. And then when I found out that I was being rehired, it was great, but the pain and spasms flared up really badly again, which to me makes a lot of sense now because I definitely perceived a lot of danger and threat with going back to work during a pandemic and all of the unknowns. And the time in May, I kind of associated with, oh, I did a harder workout. So that's probably why my back is hurting again. So I was getting a little frustrated over the summer that I wasn't really moving like myself, and I've done a lot of yoga in the past and really enjoyed it. So I decided I'm going to do the 30 days of yoga with Adrienne program again. So I started doing my daily yoga, and I actually continued for about 100 days and barely missed a day, so I like to commit. And I felt like my flexibility got a bit better. But there was still always this underlying muscle tension in my back that I just couldn't let go of. And I had a sense that, like, that's the issue. I know there's not anything majorly structurally wrong. Occasionally my leg would hurt. Maybe my disc was a little bit herniated, but I felt like it was mostly muscle tightness. And then as I'm also a murderino, like a lot of people, I was listening to My Favorite Murder, and Georgia kind of gave that shout out for the cure for chronic pain. And I was actually off of work that week on a staycation. So I had a lot of time to go on a lot of walks and listen to lots of your podcast episodes. And then I bought your book, and then I bought Dr. Sarno's book, and then I downloaded your course because I'm like, this is great. I'm going to commit to this. Nothing else really worked. And fortunately, I started the course in October, and within about 2 weeks after starting the course, the back pain was just gone. I could easily bend forward and touch my toes. And I had some kind of traveling pain to my glute and into my leg, but that went away too after about 6 weeks after I started the course. So I really loved it because I felt like journal speak was such a powerful tool, and I had so many big emotions and kind of noticed that in the beginning there was lots of anger and fear and lots of this isn't fair. And I think my inner child really wanted attention because it just felt like things so weren't fair with the pandemic. And then over time those kind of changed and I felt more emotions of guilt and shame and just a lot of varying things. But the journal speak was such a big outlet. So now I still continue with journaling about 2 to 3 times a week. And then I usually do yoga right after. I find I'm not, quote, the best at meditation. I find it hard. So I prefer kind of the moving meditation from yoga.
And the truth is the meditation piece is something that each person can make their own.
Right.
I actually added it later on in my journey, in my work, because as you know, if you took the chronic pain course, which you did, the meditation piece is not required in the chronic pain course.
Right.
Because I, at that time when I created the course, did not understand that some people really need, after journal speak, to take that time and practice self-compassion, because the things we have to say sometimes in journal speak are really tough.
Oh, for sure.
And when I started hearing back from people that that was really an imperative part of it, I started this like 30 minute thing, which is 20 minutes of journal speak, 10 minutes of meditation. But however you do it, yoga after journal speak, that sounds fabulous to me. So that's great.
Yeah, I've been definitely focusing more on self-care, and my husband knows that I'll be like, okay, it's time for journaling and yoga time. Like basically don't bug me for 45 minutes and then I'll be back out. So yeah, so that's been awesome. Yeah, I found that kind of going through your work and Dr. Sarno's work that I'm like, wow, I really was a classic personality trait. Like I've always felt big emotions, always been a perfectionist, holding myself to high standards, always wanted to be like a good girl. And I could now really see how you do or repress the emotions. And I think that did play a huge role in my back pain. And I think at least now I can kind of recognize if I am pushing down uncomfortable feelings and having a much better outlet for them. And I've heard you say in the past, like, thank God for the pain because, you know, I learned so much. And I actually feel like I did get to that point because it opened my eyes to importance of mental and emotional health. I think I've always focused so much on physical health, just being in the line of work that I'm in, that I didn't have that real appreciation for the mind-body system as a whole. And I was able to find a little bit of new empathy for my patients. Everybody has their unique experience, but having gone through chronic pain myself, I feel that I'm able to connect to my patients in a new way as well.
It's such a great story. And the reason I really jumped on it when you wrote me is because I have such an interesting relationship with physical therapy. So I want to talk about that for a minute. When I first met Dr. Sarno, he was in the stage of his career toward the end where he did not want people to go to physical therapy. And the reason he did, it used to be like in the, I think like in the 70s and 80s, he used to recommend physical therapy. It was part of the protocol. And he stopped that because he started realizing that when people were focused on the physical and when people were connecting to a physical solution for their problems, their pain was holding on. It wasn't going away because if we understand TMS theory, the mind, the brain and the nervous system are perceiving your physical pain as a safer space than feeling these feelings. And so if there's an unconscious connection between a physical solution for the physical pain, it's going to feel like that's a better place for you guys, for you to stay, you know?
Right, right.
And so I understand why Dr. Sarno, and he also, I think, did not want people. And he didn't really have the language for this the way I have the language because he wasn't a therapist. He was a medical doctor. I don't think he wanted people to be fueled by fear. I don't think he wanted people to be like, I'm going to go to a physical therapist and then they're going to fix me, because that was something that I don't think he would have called it being fueled by fear. But he was very wary of the fact that that kind of outcome would not be a positive outcome for people. And so as I started doing, you know, kind of carrying this torch and doing all the work that I've done, I started realizing that, wait a second. Things like massage, things like physical therapy, things like anything that connect you to your physical body, it doesn't have to be forbidden. It just has to be done through the lens of love. Because if you're not connecting, and I know that sounds sort of cheesy on its face, but like kind of go with it for a second. Because if you're not connecting with a, this better make me better. Oh my God, I'm so scared. This person better help me. If you're not connecting with that energy and you're just connecting with, hey, listen, I'm in a mind-body system, you know, my body is suffering. The origins of that pain are in my emotional repressed world, but that does not mean that I can't honor my body, that I can't partner with someone like you, Kathy, who could be kind and who could be supportive. And it also doesn't mean, and this was the last paragraph of your email that really got me, that there aren't negative physical changes that happen with inactivity in certain parts of our body.
Yes,
and
that's very true.
And it's very true. And actually, that's why I really am interested in kind of closing the circle so people really understand the benefit of something like physical therapy. So the last thing I'll add is anyone who's a regular listener to this podcast knows that over the summer, I crashed on my bike because I was avoiding hitting a bunny, and I had a serious incident with my shoulder. I was like, my arm was like completely ripped apart. It was super gross. I had like rocks under my skin. Sorry. And I also had a separated, what do they call it? Would it be a separated joint in my shoulder?
Your AC joint at the top.
Yes. And so they took an x-ray. They saw the separation. They said, there's literally nothing you can do for it. Just you got to rest and recover, which I did. But after about, let's say, 6 weeks of resting and recovering, I could not take my arm and put it over my head so it could rest on the floor. It literally only went like 3/4 of the way. So my other arm would go flat onto the floor and my right arm would just kind of like linger in the air in intense pain. And I know the difference between TMS pain and something where like I have atrophied my body. I was too scared to move. I rested so much and I had to go. I didn't actually end up going to physical therapy just because I'm a pretty good student and I'll do the exercises, but I went to an orthopedist who gave me this piece of paper. I'm sure you're familiar with it, Kathy, of the exercises, you know, like the stick figure person who's like, you know, whatever, like moving their arm in certain ways. And I did the exercises. They were very painful at the beginning. And now I have full range of motion in my shoulder. But without that help, I would not have. No amount of journaling was going to get that range of motion back. And so I have a very a passionate need for people to embrace all of it, but understand that if we are living in fear and if we are begging something to fix us, it's not going to, because that is dumping so much fear and panic and anger and rage into the reservoir of repressed emotions. And so it becomes sort of the law of diminishing returns. So anyway, that's my story. What do you think?
No, I completely agree. I think that's really, it's great if we're able to have a good partnership. And I totally relate to moving from a place of love and not fear. I remember one new patient evaluation, and I asked him what his goals were, because that's something I always ask people. I want to know where they're headed. And he said, "I want you to fix me." And he had a pretty complex history with chronic pain. So I very firmly but nicely set the expectation that, no, like, I can't fix you. This is a partnership. Like, I want to give you tools and I want to teach you and help you, but the expectation to be passively fixed, you know, isn't a realistic one. He actually did not return for any PT visits, unfortunately, but I think it was important that we kind of had a set expectation as to what is possible and what is realistic, and finding a place that, yeah, you're not coming in out of fear. You're not, you know, held to your exercise routine because you're so terrified that if you don't do your daily exercise routine, then something really bad's going to happen to your body. But instead, you're moving because you do love your body and you want your body to feel better when you exercise.
Exactly. Exactly. So I know one of the things you said in your email was, now that you've lived this experience in your own body and you know the, you know, not only important, but imperative connection between the mind and the body in order to have a full healing situation, how do you approach people? Because you said that you were surprised, like surprised, but not surprised, how people rarely, if ever, even connect this concept of mind and body. So how do you kind of get into that situation with people?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a challenge, because a lot of people, if you're coming to physical therapy, you're going to expect only physical interventions. And I certainly, you know, stay within my scope of practice as a PT, but I try to take a pretty detailed history when chatting with my patients. And I get the luxury of spending quite a lot of time with them, because I have an hour for an evaluation with a new patient and 30 minutes for each follow-up. And there's a lot of time that you can spend talking with somebody. So I do try to see kind of where they're coming from, and not just the connecting of physical sensation with something that happened, but is there any other underlying emotional or life event going on? And try to kind of gently open their eyes to that. It's like, I have a woman that I've worked with for a while with low back and leg pain, and she came in her shoulder and her arm were just in terrible pain and numbness and tingling. So I still do my physical evaluation to ensure there's nothing dangerous going on and nothing acute in the spine that we have to worry about. But when I talk to her about what's been going on, her husband just got a new job across the country, and it's going to require a big move. And there's just so much that goes into that. So I kind of gently touch with her that maybe some of this, you know, pain is coming from some of these challenges from this move that's coming up. And she was kind of like, oh, I didn't even think about that. But also, like, my shoulder still hurts. Like, can you get rid of the shoulder pain? So, you know, it's still kind of an ongoing process with a lot of patients, but I think there is more awareness that's starting to come from that.
And, you know, you really can say to them, this is brain science. You know, this is not just like, oh, you're emotional and so it's in your shoulder. You can explain to them that heightened fight or flight really does change the way our brain sends pain signals to our body.
Right, right.
You know, I think that helps people, especially people who are medically minded. It certainly helped me at the beginning to understand that this is not some weird hippy dippy thing where, like, we feel our feelings in our body. Like, although that's true, that didn't help me at the beginning. It helped me to understand this is brain science. When there are certain stresses to the brain and the nervous system, there are certain sensations that are enacted in the body similarly to adrenaline and cortisol, meaning that, you know, I say it often, a mother can lift a car off her baby in a moment of panic when she's flooded with adrenaline, but I certainly couldn't go into my driveway right now and lift up my car, no matter how much intention I put behind it. The brain is incredible. It's so powerful. We don't even know the capacity for the brain to change our physical functioning. And so when people understand that, sometimes they really wake up.
Oh yeah, I can definitely see that it is an interesting concept for some patients, but it makes a lot of sense when you really think about like the things that you've been able to do in moments of challenge, and that your brain is such a powerful influence on your body. It's really driving the whole system. They have to work together to have, ideal balance.
Yeah, it's really funny because my ex-husband, we're still really close, and we raised the kids and all the things. But when we were married, my uncle, so my father passed away many years ago, but he was European, and my uncle lives in London, has always lived in London. And so this was the my father had passed away, and this is my husband at the time, and he was going to be meeting my uncle for the first time. And my uncle is like a scratch tennis player. He's amazing. And David's pretty decent at tennis. And so the plan was, they were coming over from England, and he was saying to David, "I want to play tennis. I want to play tennis with you." And David was probably feeling all sorts of pressure and like whatever other big feelings, and his back went out like 2 days before my Uncle Charlie was going to come. And so I remember him like totally, he's like, "This is going to be terrible. I am too embarrassed to tell him that I'm in pain, so I have to play the tennis, but I'm going to be the worst and I can't do it." It was like a whole thing. So anyway, he ends up coming. We have like a really nice dinner, obviously. David feels really comfortable with him. The next day, after waking up and barely being able to walk, he decided, "I'm doing the tennis." And I'm like, "Okay, up to you, buddy." And we were all steeped in Sarno. So David knew exactly what was going on, but just because you know what's going on doesn't mean you can turn off the pain,
Right.
because this is brain science, your brain. But the reason I find this stuff remarkable, similar to lifting the car off your baby, maybe the stakes were a little bit lower. David said he played the best two sets of tennis of his life because his brain decided that it was more important. Everything is the difference between what hurts and what hurts worse. It was more important to show up for this experience with this only living male relative of mine that he was going to have, 5 days of his life with to know before he was going back to Europe, than to be in pain. And his, like, it's just crazy what can happen. He literally went from hobbling around the bedroom to playing two sets of incredible tennis. And I actually think then he had sort of another period for a few hours where he felt great. And then that night his back was killing him again. And I'm like, it shows you this is not structural.
Right.
It shows you that this is a very complicated mind-body dance that we understand to some extent, but to some extent, it's, the best scientists in the world don't understand the intricate workings of the human brain. And so it's just fascinating stuff,
Oh, yes, definitely. I think in all of us doing quite a bit of a literature review and just kind of reviewing the research on chronic pain, and a lot of it kind of focuses on like the after effects of chronic pain, but not the origins. And I think that's what's really still lacking is that they don't quite understand, how the brain is driving the system to have pain become chronic and what can be going on there. So I think that's kind of interesting that it's still all focused on like this is what we see after you've had chronic pain and we're trying to get rid of it, but we're not always looking at the main source, I think, in a lot of cases.
Right. So what are your thoughts, Kathy, on this concept of allied medical professionals? Of what do you think, your ideas of what can be done to sort of bridge this gap between the physical and the mental, emotional, spiritual part of the body?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to benefit everybody if we have a little bit more of a team approach because, not one person can be a professional in all areas. So I think it's very good if we're able to have a network of referrals. So that way, if I'm evaluating somebody and I note that maybe their pain is more rooted in trauma or deeper emotions, and that's certainly something I don't have the expertise in handling, then I have a group of providers that I can make the referral to who are mental health experts and are able to provide that counseling aspect. And I think even having physicians have a little bit more awareness as well with their education to kind of take it out of that structural model of pain. Because a lot of times I do have patients even entering PT and they just looked at their MRI picture with their doctor and now they're terrified because it looks really bad when you look at some normal changes that happen in the body when you're looking at imaging. So I think if we're able to all kind of work on education and setting up patient expectations and understanding of chronic pain, and the mind-body system, then everybody will benefit. And then, like you kind of mentioned, if you're noticing somebody that is, you know, seeing those negative effects of deconditioning and not moving well and not breathing well, then they may need a little bit more guidance from a professional like a PT who can really coach them through moving their body well again and restoring their physical health as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is so important for people to recognize, and I'm really glad we're having this conversation. So if you're out there suffering from any sort of chronic pain, especially obviously, you know, Kathy's an orthopedic PT, so this is not maybe around migraines or fibro. It's more around if people are having back, neck, shoulder, knee, hip, elbow, you know, what have you, that there are two levels, if you will, to chronic pain, in my estimation. And Kathy, after I say this, I'm interested to hear your opinion. I believe that all chronic pain is, or like the origins of all chronic pain are in the mind-body, fight or flight or freeze scenario that I teach. The reason I believe that all origins are is because I have just seen too much. I have seen too much. I have never seen a bulging disc that has caused someone pain as the origin. Never. The reason I know that is because I've seen, you know, over the years, thousands of people who have the bulging disc, still have the bulging disc after, and are completely pain-free for years. And so I do believe that the origin of all pain is – all chronic pain that is muscular starts – it could be originally an injury, but I'm saying once that normal healing time has happened – and once normal physical therapy has happened to, as you said, make sure that the mobility is increased and all those kind of points are those I's are dotted and T's are crossed. If pain is still existing 1, 2, 3 years later, I believe that's when the mind-body system kicks in. However, as I said with my shoulder, inactivity in certain parts of your body caused by fear of movement or caused by atrophy or caused by just not knowing properly how to move. Like when I was healing from my shoulder, I've never had a shoulder problem in my life. So I never knew that if I don't continue a certain range of motion that I'm literally going to lose it. I literally just had no idea. And so once that happens, I do believe that without a PT, it's really hard to move past, or at least without PT exercises like I did, it's really hard to move past into full body health. So anyway, that's the best I can explain it. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. I think, you know, that there may be acute tissue injury in the beginning, but our body is so resilient and has an amazing capacity to heal. And in general, if you, you know, cut yourself or get a bruise, like it's going to heal up within a few weeks. It's not going to last for years and years. And even if you have like a disc herniation, it on average takes 3 months to heal, and pretty much all of them are shown healing in 1 year. So we know it definitely doesn't correlate well with pain when you're just looking at what was that initial injury within the tissue. But if you do always avoid, you know, fully bending over to pick up something or put on your shoes, then you probably will lose that flexibility, because we do see predictable changes in the soft tissue where it becomes more inelastic and stiffer. And we'll see muscles atrophy and get weaker or shorter, and then you may lose that flexibility and strength. So it is definitely still important to continue to move well. I think that's kind of the way we're going to age the best and feel the best, is continuing to move well. So I definitely see the value in, you know, learning some key movements for your body and seeing what's going to help you feel better. And then moving from a place of understanding and not fear for yourself.
Yeah, it's all so important, and I love that. So before I move on to a couple other questions I have about your journal speak journey, do you have anything else you want to add in just in terms of the, you know, with the PT hat on?
I'd say just kind of make sure that you're connecting well with your therapist, that their treatment model is one that aligns with your beliefs, and that it's not too focused on just passive interventions, kind of things being done to your body, but focusing more on the quality of your movement and giving you feedback on how to get stronger to do those things that you want to do in your life.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I want to ask you more, because now that I have you, you know, wearing two hats, you're the success story with mind body work hat and you're the PT hat. Tell me a little bit about how it was for you, like moving into journal speak, having been a person so educated in the physical body. I actually have a good friend who's a PT, and I know how much training you need to do. And I know how much studying you need to do to learn how to be what you are. And when she first came to me this friend, she was in terrible sciatic pain, and she was in shame because she said, I'm a PT. I need to be able to heal myself, and I can't heal myself. And I said, I get it. You know, the brain is a formidable opponent. you're not going to overpower it. You're not going to win.
Exactly.
You need to listen. You can't just talk. You need to listen. And through understanding my work and doing the work, she became pain-free, but did express to me at the time that it was a bit of a difficult transition to make into being open to it. So I'm just curious about your story about that.
Yeah. Well, I've always been someone who really likes journaling, even from childhood. So I actually have journals from age 5 through like college. So if I really wanted to go back and see what was going on, I kind of can. So, but then I kind of fell out of favor with the journaling once I was in grad school and working and busy. So to me, journaling seemed like a natural avenue to go down. But I believe there was one lesson in the chronic pain course where you're kind of like asking yourself, like, can this really be true? Like, can a physical symptom be cured by an emotional exercise? And so that one I had a lot of fun with because I'm pretty analytical. So I kind of was going back and forth on the two sides of it. Like, you know, I didn't learn this in school. It's not taught in the medical model, but like, I have seen this in action with patients, how their emotions have influenced their pain. And I do think there might be something there. And I think this could be a really interesting thing to work through. So I think after kind of going through that journaling exercise, I did find it a little bit easier to buy into it. And I'm also someone that really like commits myself. So once I decide I'm going to do something, like I follow through with it. So I did have a few thoughts of, you know, this isn't what I learned in school. Maybe this isn't accurate. But once I started to kind of really commit to the journaling process, I did find it fairly easy to start to release emotions and kind of work through that practice.
And, you know, our body is our greatest proof. When people are struggling with belief, I always say, listen, obviously the best course of action is for you to jump in with four paws, you know, just totally believe. But if you can't, which not everybody can, either because of the way they were brought up or the way they, or their fear model or how much they've bought into the Western medical model, there's a lot of reasons why people can't believe. I always say, then do me a favor, suspend your disbelief, do the 28-day challenge, which is 28 days of a full journal speak practice, which is 20 minutes of journal speak, followed by some type of 10-minute loving kindness meditation, a 30-minute a day commitment, and tell me if you see a change. Because if you can let your body be your proof, that is the most powerful teaching tool.
Yes, definitely. And I feel like you have kind of nothing to lose. Like it's a low risk activity to kind of invest in yourself to journal every day. So it's like, well, why not? Like, see if it works for you. You may as well give it a try.
Did you find in your journaling journey that, and you don't have to talk about anything more personal than you'd like, but that there was any one big thing that you were like, dude, wow, okay, I didn't know that. That is a thing.
Yes, I definitely had a few like kind of big truth moments that came out that I was surprised by that I didn't realize were in there. I mean, some of the emotions I think were a little bit easier to feel. Like, of course, all the big emotions with the pandemic and stresses with working during a pandemic and things like that. But there definitely were a few truths kind of related to like childhood and just my own personality characteristics that I was like, whoa, mega truth moment here in my journaling practice.
And have you found that, so you mentioned that you're like the perfect type T personality, as they say, with TMS. Have you found that that has changed the way you move through the world?
I think I'm getting hung up on it a little bit less. Like, I think I'm giving myself a little bit more ease and forgiveness, and feeling a little less of that desire of wanting everything to be perfect. I think that's still always kind of under the surface, but I think I'm kind of feeling that, nope, it's definitely not going to be perfect. It's a tough time right now. And I'm finally letting myself like open up and ask for help a little bit more than I used to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I always say to people, you don't need to change your life to be out of pain, because the pain is a result of your brain and your nervous system going into the sustained fight, flight, or freeze as a result of thinking that if you feel the feelings, you're going to die.
Right.
You know, the feelings are a more dangerous predator than the physical pain. So it keeps you in the pain to mellow you out, to keep you safe. Once you feel the feelings and the brain and the nervous system are like, oh, wait, she didn't die. Okay, I guess this is safe. The pain signals stop firing. So that's the brain science of it. So you don't have to change your life. Nothing needs to change in order for you to be out of pain. Having said that, I do find that a lot of people, after really committing to this work, decide, like you said, oh God, am I really going to put that much energy in perfectionism? It's like not even helping me, you know? And so like you start to relent a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I found. I don't think I consciously changed much about my life, but I think I did kind of start to ease up on some of those things that seemed super scary and daunting until I put them all out there in the journaling.
So I asked this question to all of my success story interviewees. You are looking out upon a sea of people that are really suffering. They potentially are bedbound, housebound, not able to deal with whatever chronic symptom they're having. Based on your journey, what is the best advice that you can give people who are suffering?
I think just trying to get started. Sometimes that's the hardest, biggest, scariest thing. And even if it's not perfect or beautiful or amazing, like just try to get started, try to get the momentum underway and see where it takes you. I think if you commit to yourself that little bit each day, you can really see some big changes happen. It's hard. It's not going to be an easy journey. But I think if you're able to get yourself motivated to get going, you can really see your life turn around and change for the better.
Yeah, I was just on the phone last night with my 18-year-old daughter, and she's a freshman in college, and she was telling me that she finishes her assignments. She's so funny. She's like, don't worry. I hand them in on time. She said, but I'm so annoyed with myself because I sit on the couch and I have time to do something and I just don't do it. And then when I'm pressured, when the world brings that pressure onto me that I know I have to hand it in at, you know, X time, I do it, but I create so much suffering in myself. And I, you know, she was saying, I don't like that about myself. And I said, honey, move a muscle, change a thought.
Right.
You need to get, I said, when you're sitting on the couch and you are unable to motivate, I said, what you need to do is stand up and walk from the couch to another room and do something, make your bed, you know, like organize your desk. Don't do the thing you're dreading doing, do anything. Because like you're saying, Kathy, just start. I had a meme once that I used to put up on my Instagram that just said, just start, just those two words, because it's so powerful.
Exactly. It's hard. It's big, but it doesn't have to be you doing the biggest, hugest thing. Like one of my motivating quotes is that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. So you just have to take one step and then see where you go.
Yes, 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 yes. All right. Well, really, really great to talk to you, Kathy. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Nicole. I'm so glad this worked out.
And now I know that you're local to Massachusetts, but if indeed people are listening in your area, how can they find you?
So I work out of Marathon Physical Therapy in Newton. So you can just kind of Google us. We'll pop up. I do virtual visits, but you have to be located in Massachusetts for that to work out.
All right. So my Massachusetts people, if you are needing any sort of physical therapy, you have hit a gold mine here with Kathy. And so so check her out and check out Marathon.
Great.
All right. So everybody, I hope that this was a bit eye-opening for you. You know, physical therapy is not the enemy of TMS work. It is simply a partner. And if we can understand how to use both through the lens of love, not with a desperate need to heal, but with a partnership between your mind and your body and between yourself and all of these practices, it really leads to the best version of whole body health. So once again, Kathy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Nicole.
All right, guys. Well, if you are enjoying this podcast, it is a great favor to me if you go over to iTunes and rate and review it. It helps other people find the podcast and it brings it to the attention of people who are suffering. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. See you then.